One thing that I will say is that, you know, I would venture to really point out here that the sharing of this information in itself is very healing. Because when people are receiving the information that you're sharing, they're going to experience a tremendous amount of healing. Just having access to a lot of this is going to bring about aha, you know. I would definitely venture to say that that is healing, even though you regard it as the sharing of information. Of course, there's a pretty broad definition of what healing constitutes these days, but I would definitely say that that is one of them. What you share in the Sage Age, and in fact, as I was reading Chapter 4, and, you know, the body-mind antenna, and really appreciating this so much, of course, I was going through a lot of these ahas and realizing that this is the kind of stuff that I've been active in all of my life. Mm-hmm. And then reading about something and said, well, there's an example of Reiki right there, or there's an example of telepathy, which is so important for people to really get their arms around at this time. So you're really offering some great healing in the form of words and information.
Well, too, and clarity.
Oh, yes.
Healing for our clarity, because the reason I wrote the book was, as I didn't intend to publish it. When I started the research, it was for me, entirely for me.
Did you start it, Mayanna?
Oh, I started, it was right after I finished The Last Warrior, and I wrote that in February of 2003. It was immediately after that. It was the very next thing I did. And I had heard about all of these things in quantum physics, you know, that frontier science was bringing to the forefront. And I heard a lot of things in the intuitive practitioner's language that they were using the same words and saying there were things happening in frontier science that I heard intuitive practitioners say, see, they're talking about what we've been talking about all this time. It's like, no, they're not. They're not at all. It's not justifying what you're doing at all. As a matter of fact, they're pretty clueless about what you're doing. And then on the other side of it, intuitives not understanding some of the scientific jargon and realizing that science was actually finding and proving some of the very things intuitives have been experiencing, except that there was a language barrier.
Sure.
And so, like the word dimension. For an intuitive practitioner, the word dimension means realms of existence. But to a rational scientist, it means planes of measure. And has nothing to do with other dimensions. I mean, other realms. So, you know, just something as small as the word dimension is so misunderstood between the two camps. So I started the research for myself to get to the bottom of these things, to find out what quantum physics was actually about, what physics was actually about, what we actually knew through science. And then to also look at what intuitive practitioners were actually doing. What was going on with that? What was the difference between therapeutic touch and Reiki and all these different modalities that were being used? Because I wasn't real clear about that. So that's where the research started. But my point of the book was to be able to see if the body was an antenna, a multifaceted antenna, to receive all sorts of information and transmit all sorts of information. And that is exactly what I was able to find. And the first four chapters of the book are devoted specifically to that. Not only the physical body, all the way down to the cellular level, up to the bones and the structure of the body as an antenna system, a physical antenna system, like a radio antenna or a TV antenna, exactly like that. But also through the chakras, through the subtle bodies, through the chi energy that runs through us, that sort of thing, for those types of frequencies. How are we receiving that? How are we translating the energy and the informed energy from the non-tangible realms into the tangible realms? And how does our thought and intent and our feelings affect that and how that translates back and forth? So that's what I was doing with the book. And you know, about 3 years into it, I had enough information to really start connecting the dots between what seemed like, on the surface, far-flung disciplines. And I could actually start seeing that they weren't far-flung at all. They were actually opposite sides of the same coin. And so I was able to start putting two and two together and coming out with very unique fours, and I just started getting my hair blown back every day. It was those aha moments of, oh, I get that, and being able to connect those dots. And PMH Atwater says that when you can start connecting the dots, then you'll see the web. And that's
absolutely
true.
She's been such a wonderful friend, and bless her, very, very prolific in the, you know, her own ability to gather all this information, again, a lot of it from experience. Likewise, being a multiple NDE, she's done tremendous work also bridging the gap between experience and research.
So, well, her unique perspective gives her such a holistic understanding and a clarity that I think a lot of physicists on the planet would probably envy if they would just read her.
Mm-hmm.
Because she has, especially in Future Memory, that is
yes. My
all-time favorite book. I recommend it all over the place because, as it is with all of her work, it incorporates more information than the title suggests. And it's not just about her experiences, it's Future Memory. But she has the best take on quantum physics of any layperson I have ever read. She totally, totally gets it. Totally. Completely understands it. And I am so thrilled for the work that she's done and putting it out there, especially, and you know this too because you were subjected to it back when this was woo-woo and it wasn't very accepted to talk about near-death experiences, especially if you had something that wasn't directly related to that person's religion that you were telling it to.
Yes.
And if it didn't conform to their beliefs about that, they didn't want to hear it. And, you know, it takes a lot of courage for PMH and for you and for others to do what you're doing. And the fact that the both of you came up and did what you did and stood your ground with it and said what you had to say gave a lot of comfort to other people.
PMH has turned around the following year after her NDEs in 1978 and started immediately doing research and talking about it, writing about it. And she was dished out a lot of opposition and ridicule as a result, part of which is the fact is because she was a female.
Mm.
You know, really sort of going into territory that she was theoretically not supposed to traverse. On the other hand, I didn't have my coming out actually until the beginning of the new millennium in Nashville, of all places. So here was PMH at the... in the late 70s doing this. Well, she had encountered Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, so that really helped her straight away. That helped catapult her onto her path, whereas, you know, I didn't really even come out until the beginning of this millennium, so there's a radical contrast there. But now it's like, okay, there's no turning back. We're out there with this come what may, sharing this information, and people like you. You know, I'm sort of at one end of the spectrum and you're at the other and PMH in the middle, in that PMH and I are both experiencers, but somehow PMH has had a better command of the scientific language.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got an excellent command of that language. I can understand it, but I can't speak it, if you get my drift. So, so much of this is still ineffable trying to describe it. But then if you say something, I can say yes, coming from a place of experience and knowing.
Exactly. And from talking to you for years and listening to your shows as well, there's absolutely no doubt that you get it. No doubt whatsoever, whether you speak it or not, because you do come from an experiential knowledge. And
yes.
One of the things that the Sage Age points out is for us to go forward, we must value all ways of knowing. And experiential knowing is for most people ineffable. And PMH Atwater has done a fabulous job putting things into words. And I thank her for that. Because there are several experiences that I've had that I took great comfort. And she just barely mentioned them in some of her books, but it was there. And that somebody else has experienced this and can say what it is with some authority. And not from a place of being overwhelmed by it, but from a place of understanding, which is where she is.
Yes.
So if you talk to a lot of newbie people who are having these experiences, they're totally overwhelmed.
Oh, yes.
And they don't have context for them. And the type of counseling that you do, and probably that PMH does as well, is help people through that to see it in a much larger context than their own belief system. Because, Juliet, honestly, that is what a paradigm shift is. It literally moves you from your belief system into a larger context. It forces you to reevaluate your entire belief system.
And we need to move from belief into knowing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so interesting. Somebody had asked me a few days ago something to the effect of, do you believe in life after death? And I said, no, I don't believe in it. I know it.
Right.
So
one of the things that I found by reading history, and history is so vital, because without it, we have no perspective of what's going on with us now. History is as much about our future as it is our past. And one of the things that I read was The Timaeus by Plato. And it's a tough book. It's tough. If you read it, get commentary with it, because it's a really, really difficult book otherwise. But one of the quotes that I found in there from Plato that I just dearly love is, he says of what science is that we know that we know that we know. And of the tangible world, all we can say of it is, it seems so, because it's always changing.
Yes.
And when I read that, I went, what happened to that? Where did that go? Where did that change? And being able to read the evolution of human thought by studying history and philosophy, that was a gift I gave to myself. But it's also in the Sage Age because it's vitally important. It's not possible to understand the significance of what's happening today without a context. And history is the only context, because many of the things that we're exploring, even in frontier science, even with the Large Hadron Collider that's ramping up to speed and is going to recreate the first instant of the Big Bang, this is the fruit of ancient questions, questions that were asked in antiquity. It's the nature of change in motion. Where did things come from? We're still very much in the West on the path laid out by Pythagoras. And for all the innovations and the things that we think we have changed, we have not moved from that mindset yet. And the Eastern mindset is extraordinarily different.
Yes.
From that. And that's being blended now, and we desperately need that balance. But especially in America, we tend to pick and choose little pieces of other cultures, belief systems, and religions, and that kind of thing, and incorporate them into a whole that had never existed before, and make it our own. And, you know, that comes without understanding. It comes without understanding how those pieces fit into the whole, and without the tradition of them. And so that blending is wonderful, but by the same token, we're doing it without any bigger context to understand it. And we're not really getting the balance of it. We're just getting stew. We're just getting this pot of amalgamated stuff that really has no tradition or history or context.
Well, that's a good point. And I think now, and one thing I really want to stress the importance of, too, is that not only as people are doing reading and researching and talking to one another, what have you, we also need to go into the dream time and listen to our experiences that we're having on other planes of existence, that we do need to listen to and acknowledge and honor the experiences that we do have in other dimensions via telepathy. So that was kind of an interesting sort of dicky
that happened.
Well, one
of the things that occurred during the writing processes, and writing for me, the Sage Age, the actual physical writing of it gave me everything that I wanted from the book. And publishing it was almost an afterthought, because, like I said, by the third year of research, I found it so immensely helpful to have all of this broad, vast information collected in one place where I could reference it, that I thought other people would find it helpful too, and that's what initiated the idea to publish it. But the actual writing of it was a pretty tremendous process as well, because I had a lot of guidance for it. And I don't have personal guides. What I have are guides that are attached to the work that I'm doing. Basically, whatever it is that I'm going to be involved in, there are experts around me. And I also have my soul memories from all of my experience, my entire soul's experience, to pull on whether I have actually experienced them here or not. And that was a very interesting episode in writing the book, was to have these other influences available, and other voices, literally, available to share in their expertise and to offer guidance to help sort through the material. And to be able to listen not only to my inner voices, but to be able to listen to human thought, just human thought alone. Because whatever we have thought, and Carl Jung speaks of this, that whatever it is that we have in our thought process is available to everybody.
Absolutely.
And it explains a whole lot to be able to understand that, how concepts jumped from continent to continent, and people all over the earth came up with the same sorts of things, even though they weren't physically in contact with one another, especially in ancient civilizations. They all came up with the same basic ideas. And, you know, it doesn't matter about time, but they all found the same sorts of things. And if we anchor information into this place, it's available to everyone who wants that information.
Well, very, very good example of this, Mayanna, is... And you'll really like this. People, again, who are friends who've been on this show, PMA Chatwater, Dr. Peter Finnick, Dr. Pim Van Bommel, Dr. Claude Swanson, and myself, and this is just to name a few right here, and of course there's many, many more. We've all independently of one another have come up with the same analogy of consciousness and the brain being like a radio or a television, which is the receiver, and consciousness being the broadcaster that comes from outside of the brain. And I was so excited when I heard Peter Finnick talking about this during his lecture, and he's written about it, and Dr. Pim Van Bommel was talking about the same thing. And then PMH mentioned it, and I said, well, blimey, I've been saying the very same thing and using the exact same analogy. So there's a very good example of all of us tapping into this same illustration, as it were, almost verbatim.
And the Sage Age does the same thing. In the first few chapters, it talks about the physical body, how it's an antenna, how it receives information.
Exactly.
And then also the subtle bodies. And how they receive different sorts of informed energy. And things that are for the physical realm, the physical body understands and receives, but things that are of the intangible realm, the other bodies receive that information in private. And so we have multiple processing centers. So one of the things with science, I believe, that intuitive practitioners are trying to point out is the brain is not the only processing center that counts. It's one of them.
Exactly.
But it's certainly not the only one. And what a lot of the complementary alternative medicine show are the other energy centers. And now science finally, as far as the physical sciences, they finally have the technology to be able to measure some of these subtle energies. And not at the level that an intuitive practitioner can work with them, but to some degree to say, yes, there is something beyond the physical body that's happening here. And so that's very exciting. And I think of things like the acupuncture meridians, the map of that. And it's extraordinarily detailed. And it's at least, 3,000 years old, maybe 5,000 years old?
Yes, closer to 5,000.
5,000 years old. And so the idea of blending the rational sciences and intuitive arts is certainly not new. Because there it is, done at an extraordinary level of expertise. because it takes an extraordinary level of expertise in the intuitive arts to be able to find those energies and map them and know what they go to, know what they do, and just run the trails through the energy body. It takes a high degree of expertise in science, in organizational skills, in rational thinking to be able to actually make the map of the body. And so we know that acupuncture works. We know that it's kept a lot of people on the face of the earth alive for a lot longer than what our modern pharmaceuticals and science have kept people alive. And the reason that we don't go just sticking needles in anywhere is because it's highly ineffective. And being able to use the science, like making a map, is critical to the effectiveness of that sort of thing. And all we're doing is looking to go back to that same level of blending our ways of knowing. We're not reinventing something. We're not trying to change the way things are. We're trying to blend our expertise again. Because the world used to be in a way that it believed in the intuitive arts. That was the way that we understood the world. And then the rational mind and its curiosities took over. And at this point in time, that's the way we see the world. And all we're trying to do is blend those things back together and not make it exclusive any longer. It's not that we never have relied exclusively on our intuition. We did. That's what kept the race alive.
And so it's by bringing the pendulum back to the center, balancing and integrating and refining all of this to something that's very pristine.
Absolutely.
And clear.
Absolutely. The thing that I want to do most is open the dialogue in a way that we can understand one another, to get the intuitive arts practitioners speaking to the physicist. Not just science. I think a lot of intuitive arts practitioners are also healers. And what they know of science has to do with doctors or medical or pharmaceuticals. And they're all against that. They're all, I don't want anything to do with it. I don't want to talk about it. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know how much they're destroying people instead of healing them. They're not interested in healing, you know, and the whole medical profession is being one big moneymaker. But that's not science as a whole. And I would invite intuitive arts practitioners to talk to physicists, not to medical professionals, but to physicists, quantum physicists.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
That's the camp I've been in, and I've really enjoyed speaking with these physicists, because indeed they know how, you know, very much like yourself, to bridge that gap. And Claude Swanson is one of them, and Muriel Beauregard has been on my show.
Mm-hmm.
It's tremendous, and there's a lot more of this that is happening, which has got me very excited. It doesn't need to be a thing of opposition and pointing fingers anymore, but hey, you've got something I can use now, and you've got
Absolutely.
Something I can use as well.
And that's one of the things that I just adore about you, is that you're totally willing to listen to other ways of knowing and incorporate that and see the bigger picture and see how things fit together. And I really believe that a lot of people would be surprised to know that the most resistance that I have received to the messages that are in the Sage Agent information are from intuitives, not from scientists, not from physicists.
Interesting.
Because one of the reasons for that, this is my humble opinion, is that intuitives have really had to fight to be able to justify what they're saying, into, like you were saying about PMH, and you to take the ridicule and to take the woo-woo-ness of it and that sort of thing. And they've really had to work hard to establish themselves. And some folks have lost their careers and lost their personal, people just put them aside as some kind of flaky something or other, which is not in the least bit true. They were just very challenging to folks' belief systems. And what I'm finding is that a lot of intuitives, when I bring a more scientific understanding to things, they don't want to participate in it because it takes away their specialness. You know, there's a fear that they won't be special anymore, that they can do this and other people can't, like telepathy. Now, what if that becomes normal instead of a special gift?
That's what I would like you to, yes.
And once we get past the point of need of being ill and whatever we're using illness for in our spiritual evolution, we won't need healers anymore either.
Well, to me, this is really good news, and I find that we need to embrace this. This is just the way it is. It's very natural as breathing. I'm just going to endeavor to say that it's an ego thing that requires one to feel special. I think we're all special because we're all these beautiful balls of light.
Yes.
That have been brought here to fulfill a calling. Now, I've got to say, we're really about at the end of this transmission of Toward the Light, and I know we could go on nattering for hours because there's such a richness of content to share here, but why don't you tell our listeners what your website is on, if you've got anything special coming up you'd like to let them know about.
The website is www.sageage.net. And you can find information about the book, about me. You can even sign up for the newsletter and get a free ebook, which is How Thoughts Become Reality. There are a bunch of articles on the site that are taken from excerpts from the book. So basically, you can try before you buy the book. There's lots of free things there for you to read. And the book will be featured in Publishers Weekly, the September 22nd edition of Publishers Weekly.
Tomorrow.
So things are going very well for it.
Well, that's wonderful, Mayanna. It has been such a joy having you on Toward the Light. We've been speaking with Mayanna Stevenson, author of The Sage Age, Blending Science with Intuitive Wisdom, a wonderful must-have book, in my humble opinion. So I want to encourage you again to visit sageage.net for more information. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. Next week, we will be speaking with Kimberly Wincy about near-death experiences and being in communion with children who have transitioned to the other side. So it's going to be a very special and moving show next week. Please do join us. Love and blessings to all of you. Thank you for listening in, and we will speak to you next week on another transmission of Toward the Light.